You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Now, Lacrosse is at it again with a new line of lace-up hunting boots, the Navigator Series. And in that Navigator Series, there are two models. There's the Atlas for men and the Windrose for both men and women. To find out more information about this new Navigator Series, visit lacrossefootwear.com.
Hey guys, welcome to Land and Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith. We're co-owners of a consulting company called, go figure, Land and Legacy. This is your number one podcast resource for all things land.
Each week, we're breaking down topics from land management, habitat management, conservation, farming practices, and real estate. We hope you guys enjoy it.
Hey guys, welcome back.
Here we are outside once again. I like these outside podcasts. I'm beginning to become a fan.
It'll be nicer in a month or two.
Yes.
Yeah.
We need to take it to the tree stand one day. Just do a live
deer hunting
podcast.
We talked about that, and we talked about doing it on squirrel hunt, but
yes.
I just, like, a deer hunt would be kind of cool, and I think, you know, it was Clay Newcomb that we heard. He did one, it was probably a year ago, where he was in a redneck blind talking while he was on
when
a bear hunt.
When he harvested the bear. Big giant bear.
And so, this one is definitely it's going to be fun.
We should have done today's by the hickory at Fiasco and shot squirrels.
Yeah, we could have.
Is it open right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's almost open year
squirrel
round.
Squirrel season
now.
Is open.
I haven't.
It closes.
Regrettably checked.
I just combined
seasons.
two months. September. It closes
for everyone outside of the Ozarks. That's February through September. September.
Yeah, and so it closes February 15th, I believe, right? And it opens back up Memorial Day weekend, usually. So late.
Did y'all
May.
Ever shoot squirrels early growing up, and they had like the wolves in them, like the not a wolf. But, like, the wolves, like that thing that buried under the skin, under the hide?
Mm-mm. No, most of what
really?
We dealt with was seed ticks.
On the squirrels?
On us.
Oh, okay. Like,
squirrels
dang.
Don't usually have a lot
back
of ticks
when we were
on.
That 11 and 12-year-old and you're just wanting to go hunting and you get...
I will forget the seed ticks for
like,
a
even
squirrel.
If you didn't have any spray, it was just like, I'm going to go squirrel hunting. And you would
because it's in.
Turn your legs brown with seed ticks.
Yeah. And no, that is when, so for you guys that are hearing that other voice, that's my brother Chad. He's back with us this week.
Actually, in presence is here. Not
not
over
the
phone.
Not on the phone. Not that last desperation. Hey, we need a topic.
Yeah.
Can you jump on? So you had a, Matt, you may have not heard this story, but Chad at one point had a seed tick on his eyeball.
Yeah.
Biting on the white of my eye, and it was because it was one of those where I didn't spray. I wanted to go squirrel hunting. I think I was in middle school, and I went out there squirrel hunting and was just trying to wipe the seed ticks. All I could figure out was I was trying to wipe the seed ticks off my
get
pant
the majority
legs.
Of them off.
And then I had one on my hand,
and
when I wiped
sweat.
My eye, I put it on my eye.
Gross.
And didn't realize it until the next day at school. My eye was bothering me, and I'm like, what is wrong with my eye? I think I've got something on my eye. And I went to the bathroom and looked in the mirror, and I'm like, what is that? And got close and realized what it was and went to the nurse and was like, I think I
what did they do for that?
I had to go to the doctor
and
have
alcohol
it removed.
On it.
And then I had to do like
cover
an antibiotic.
His mouth, open his eye.
Like an antibiotic.
Really?
Ointment on my eye. It was a pain.
Did they pull
well,
it off?
Guarantee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross. I couldn't remember that.
Oh, that's why you wear the patch.
Yeah. <I'm kidding. laughs> For those that don't
everyone's
know.
Everyone's like, oh my God, Chad wears the patch. No, that's not true.
Arr, matey. My wife and I and mom were talking just the other day, yesterday actually, I think, of broken bones or hospital visits, and she said, yeah, Chad had to, I'd take him to the doctor one time to get stitches. You remember that? You were climbing up on the
the shed to shoot blackbirds and fell off, or no, I didn't fall off. I went to jump off, and it was an old window, and my feet went through it.
Oh, yeah.
And it tripped me up, and I fell down on the glass and cut my arm.
All for a blackbird.
Hey, it was
serious business back in the day. For sure. So this week's podcast, we're going to talk about, I guess I can't really say this week's because we always do two, and one of them is almost always devoted to habitat or conservation or land management. And we're kind of, as we're getting into hunting season, so you'll start hearing a lot of the second podcast or one of the podcasts every week will be kind of hunting devoted. And this one, you know, it's, I don't know when this is going to release.
Early September. September 3rd, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. And we're going to be discussing the unwritten rules of hunting. For you baseball fans out there, or golf fans, shoot, there's unwritten rules for a lot of sports.
There's a lot of code of ethics.
Yeah, and I think of, in baseball, there's a, Chad and I both have a whole book on the unwritten rules of baseball. And there's unwritten rules on golf and all kinds of things. But I think there's unwritten rules. And who knows, there may be a podcast on this topic before. But there's a lot of rules, unwritten rules or code of ethics for hunting that we wanted to discuss. I don't know if it may come to a shock to some of you, but we've spent a good majority of our younger years hunting public ground. So we have a lot of experience hunting public ground and different scenarios and things that have come up with that. We still hunt some public ground.
I've probably spent more time hunting public ground recently than either of you have gotten to, just because you've been...
Yeah, work last... since 2011, I've been... 2011-2017 was really a lot of filming hunts and filming for shows and not so much time hunting public ground. Now we've got kind of a, with Land and Legacy started, we've been hunting our own farm some and hunting some places we have permission. So we haven't really hunted a whole lot of public ground. We have for turkeys and yeah, turkeys mainly. Mm-hmm. But we'll probably hunt some deer on public ground at some point. Maybe even this fall. Depends on what we have going on. But
And the tag situation.
Yes, and the tag situation.
That's optimistic talk.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of unwritten rules. There's a lot of things that's like, my goodness, we have ran into just some doggone crazy stories.
We're writing a book about it.
Yeah, there should be a book on this. And anyway, so we asked you guys, listeners, today, this morning, to kind of put your input in, and there was a lot of comments.
On social media.
And a lot of really, really good interaction, a couple hilarious comments. And so, we're going to go through those, and we're going to go through a list of our own questions.
A lot of these are so situational, too. So, like... there's not always like a definitive you should never never ever do this or this is only under these circumstances. Like, things vary a lot and a lot across the country with different hunting techniques and things, so it should be a lot of open discussion.
To me, a lot of times the like unwritten rules in hunting are more of a gray area so much as like in like the sports, the unwritten rules are more of a, they're a little more black and white than the hunting stuff. A lot of our unwritten rules, and I mean, most of our rules in hunting are written. They're all laws.
Yeah.
The legal or the unwritten rules are more gray area because there seems to be a lot of opinions from one person to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's been a couple, like I asked a scenario on our social media handles. Really a couple things. I ask if you're hunting public land and you find an unattended tree stand, is it okay to hunt from it? Then I also ask, is it okay to share trail cam pictures of a hitless buck from your buddy's camera? And a lot of guys on there say no and no. So they don't think you should be able to hunt out of another guy's tree stand on public land. And we'll discuss that. And then the other one was, should you share trail cam pictures from a buddy's camera? I feel like that one right there I think that is a rule. Like, it's an unwritten rule. Like, you shouldn't do that because there's been certain instances like this summer where a good friend of ours and team member Seth Harker, he sent us pictures, and I know we've shared it with each other. And then he's done the same thing. But I feel like if feller whatever – Tom, one of our made-up friends, he sends us pictures. We don't have the right to pass that along to say, hey, check out picture of this buck that Tom has. What are your thoughts?
My thing is, it's not yours to share.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't go through the effort of capturing it. It's not your camera. We'll get into this one later on. It's one that's kind of been burning in my mind. It's not your deer.
Especially to specify, like, hey, look at the picture so-and-so got.
Yeah.
To
put them out there. It's on his farm.
You see the big deer that so-and-so's got running around? My goodness.
Yeah.
Especially go to a neighbor and say, hey, you got pictures of that deer?
Yeah. Unless they share it openly, like on social media or something like that, to me it's like, you don't go and share their business. Hopefully they're trusting you to keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
And then you go and do that. I don't see that being right.
That's to me. I feel like that's one that's probably broken a lot.
Probably
more in the shadows than anything.
Hey,
did you see this deer?
Yeah.
Did you see the deer so and so's got? My goodness, what's he doing over there?
Well, you know, what's weird is and it's kind of a shame. I think we've talked about on the podcast is when there's pictures of big deer, like how many times do you see them almost – it's like a news story. They get leaked, and then you just see them pop up randomly on other people's pages, and you're like, whoa, wait a second. I know that deer.
We had an instance like this just like 2 days ago. I haven't told you about it, but there was a picture shared down where I work, or a video
really?
Of a deer swimming in the river, and it was all over the people at work because it was public land. And they were like, hey, did you see this deer? And they were like, yeah, where was that? Where's that at? And they're like, watch the rest of the video. And you see like a landmark that is
definitive.
No doubt where it was at. And we're like, it was on Facebook. So, I mean,
everyone was like, I'm hunting.
I ran into a guy that evening at Walmart. It was like, hey, did you see that deer over there on video?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's. There's going to be a lot of people over there because it was a really good deer.
Right. Well, it's funny. Like, even, like I said, we talked about this on the podcast before, but like real estate pictures. Unfortunately, and it's pretty shameful, but people will keep the same pictures and they pop up on different listings. It's like, you've got, like, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's horrible. That's not an unwritten rule in real estate.
Well,
that's just false advertisement.
To the outfitters that. There was a thing going around last year of an outfitter that was taking pictures off social media and putting them in advertising.
Really?
And a guy found it.
Wow.
Realized that some outfitter in like southern Missouri was using the pictures from a guy in northern Missouri.
We're team members. We work together. He just don't know.
He's got a big range, that deer.
Yeah.
Big home range.
Oh, that's funny.
Speaking of which, did you hear – I can't remember. Don't quote me on this, but you know the state of Missouri is doing that survey of deer ranges. I'm going to have to go back. Remind me after a show. We're going to have to go and talk to a couple our state employee friends. There was a young deer, I think a year and a half old or 2.5 year old, that had a humongous range in northern Missouri. Like counties and counties, I thought. I believe that's right.
He survived?
Yeah. Well, it was during the summer. So.
Oh, okay.
All right.
That's just don't make
trail
no sense
cameras,
at all.
I feel like that one's broken a lot. And it's like,
but I feel
like a person's trail cam images, their hit list is something that's like pretty secretive somewhat. And then if you just take them and if he's posting them on social media, sure. That like if you broadcast something on social media, it's like, you're giving the world permission to share that, not claim that, but share that. But if you're like a pretty secretive guy and you're just kind of throwing a few out there to friends, I don't feel like they have permission to share that. So we've got a lot of questions to cover, by the way. So we're gonna have to.
Another one to deal with trail cameras. To like, I guess a question of an unwritten rule that what you guys think. What if you've got a place that you hunt quite a bit on public ground. Say you have a stand there and you come in a couple weeks later and somebody's got a trail camera there. Do you check the card?
I figured you were going to go that. Like if you see a trail camera on public land, which public land by one word to me sums up everything about it. It's public. So it's private property, but you lose that once you put it on public ground.
And here's another thing with the trail cameras. In Missouri, it's actually against the law to run trail cameras on state land.
Really?
Yeah.
State land, not federal. Federal, you can.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. MDC,
there's a lot of guys.
MDC.
That do that.
Oh, it's probably one of those written
it's
rules that they don't ever enforce.
A couple years ago, there's kind of a, I don't know that there's any truth to the story, but there's a story behind it. But they put a thing out there that you can't run cameras on state land.
Huh. Well, you can't leave stands, tree stands, past. You can put them up,
right?
And when I forget when you can put them up, but you have to have them down by the end of February, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, if you find a tree stand during turkey
season, they
have
your tag on it.
Yeah,
like, not your hunting license, but like a name tag and address and phone
you
number.
Can,
I think,
yeah,
like
you could put your state hunting ID number on it. That's mm-hmm. what I used to do. We used to take the things off briefcase. Travel bags that would your name and address, mm-hmm. and I would just clip that onto my tree stands. You don't hardly ever see it, mm-hmm. or you'll see Sharpie written on them. Well, I forgot about those rules. It's been so long since I've hung a tree stand to stay on public land.
They were just talking about it in Arkansas at work the other day. In on the Forest Service ground, you can only.
Hey, we're sitting outside. I'm gonna make sure everybody knows what's going on, so it's not Matt and I over here not getting the dials right. We're sitting outside. It's a little warm. We all have waters and tea to drink, and Chad keeps drinking. And
you got to let that water last the whole podcast here.
Well, every time he does it, he moves that stinking mic around, so he'll be very
he'll be
soft,
quiet.
And then he'll
so
blast
anyway.
Us.
Jeez.
Yeah?
Anyway, it was like you can only have stands out 14 days at a time.
Really?
Because they were complaining and wanting to get
That's
the rule changed because they can only have it there 14 days at a time.
Huh.
I wonder what the purpose of that is.
I think it comes down to a lot of Forest Service rules where it's like camping. You can only camp 14 days. It's something like that where you just have to move them.
Yeah.
Every 14 days.
That's interesting. I don't mind that rule.
No.
I think a lot of times we've seen this on public ground in Missouri and other places where people just leave their tree stands. They start getting grown into trees and damaging trees.
Well, I guess this gives us a chance to get into the one question of the tree stand.
Yeah.
The tree stand question. Because we've got some scenarios to throw out to see if you're just, thought-provoking to see if it changes people's minds.
And I bet you...
Because we've ran into all of these.
Yes. So the question is, I guess one of the questions, let's say you're hunting and you're on public ground and you're walking along and you end up finding a tree stand in a pretty good spot. Can you? Is it an unwritten rule to hunt it? To not hunt it?
I would not climb in another person's tree stand to hunt it. I just wouldn't.
To me, there's a lot of scenarios because you can say, no, you can't do it. But there's been a lot of instances where if it's the only only tree.
I ran that by you guys earlier. I'm like, so a lot of people think of it as timbered ground and there's trees everywhere, but say you go to somewhere where there's a lack of like suitable
Oklahoma,
trees to hang tree stands
Oklahoma, Kansas,
in.
Northern Missouri.
The only tree you can hang in, there's a stand there.
Yeah.
Do you go to the trouble of hanging above it?
Yeah.
There's
a lot
the
of
only
times
tree you can hunt. Because I ran into it in Northern Missouri.
Yeah. To me, you know my story. I've hunted and killed a pretty good deer out of another guy's tree stand. Wasn't planning on it, and I'd go to my grave saying this. I climbed in the tree to look at the food plot because of the terrain, and when I got in the tree, deer started coming in, and I was stuck. I ended up shooting a really nice 28-29-inch 10-pointer out of that tree stand. Now, is it against the unwritten rules? I don't know. To me, it's like...
I'll say this. If you were the guy who had the stand,
yeah,
and you walk in there and see some guy in your stand,
well, that's another part of the story.
There's like, another thing. If,
what would you do? What would you feel like, dude? You're in my stand.
Yeah, for sure. But the other part of that story is I was already really, really late getting into it, so it was like if nobody's in this tree stand.
I
ain't gonna be.
I ran into another scenario of that, public land where I used to have pictures of it, but I walked into a place. I'd parked there, got there really early, walked in. It was hot. It was October. There was a pond that was hidden. I'm like, okay, I can go in there. Well, I get in there, and I'm like, oh, there's a tree stand there. Luckily, there were multiple trees I could hang in. I hung in a tree like 15 yards from this other tree that had a climber at the bottom of it. 30 minutes before dark, I hear leaves crunching. I'm like, here comes a deer. And it's a guy comes walking in. I whistle and wave at him.
Yeah.
And he looks up at me.
I remember you sending me a picture of this.
Puts his head down and just keeps coming. I'm like, this guy's going to climb this tree stand.
Bro.
And he climbs up 15 yards from me, like on the same level, won't look at me.
Really?
But goes ahead and, like, knocks an arrow. He has, like, two arrows there. I mean, he was ready to go. And I'm
he
sitting there
rattling.
Like, you better believe if a deer comes within 50 yards of us and he's getting ready, I'm shooting or scaring the deer because he's not going to shoot first.
See,
I was cracking up because I would take pictures and was sending it to everybody.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
look
yeah,
at
yeah.
this. Look at this guy.
See, yeah. that to me, that's just rude. Yeah. Like, there definitely is I think the unwritten rule is, hey, if you're on public land, if you get there first, you hunt that area. It doesn't matter if you have a stand there already. If you're late to the game, you're late to the game. Just be respectful and
that's,
go hunt another
that's
spot.
That's why if you hunt public land, you try to make sure that you have four or five or six a list of backup areas to go to.
Sure.
Because you're – no matter what, you're going to run into somebody. You're going to have somebody get there before you.
That's just an unknown. And that's, you know, that's fine.
So that's the question. If you leave a tree stand in the woods, is that claiming a spot?
You know my answer, and that's a no.
Yeah. No, I don't think it claims a spot unless you're already in that tree hunting.
So
I,
what
I
if, guess... what if, let's flip this, let's jump the fence into another scenario. So Matt said he's not going to hunt another guy's tree stand. If you go into a cove on opening day of duck season and there's a whole spread of decoys out there and there's nobody around, you're going to hunt the decoys, you're going to pull them all up and throw your own decoys out there.
That's a different decoy situation there. Like,
what's the difference?
See, this is where
all these scenarios.
The unwritten rules are very gray.
Yeah.
They are.
Because this has happened to Chad and I. We had an amazing spot we found on one of the local lakes around here. We knew there was a lot of waterfowl using it, and it was
we had a buddy that doesn't deer hunt.
Yeah.
So he'd been scouting ready.
He's like, we're going to be in there. And next morning we roll in there, and there's this whole spread of decoys.
Weird.
And we're like,
I would never
like
leave decoys.
Shine lights around, nobody around.
And here's the best part. So we're like, it's a cove. It's not a very big cove either. It's like, well,
yeah,
we'll go. We left them. We just put our spread right next to it.
Yeah.
And here they come, thinking they just roll right in there.
Uh-huh.
It was like, man.
I mean, you utilized a spread that was already there and built a bigger spread is what you're saying.
No.
Or it was just.
We ended up moving. We were not right next to it. We were out, like, at the edge of the cove then.
We had to go to the mouth of the cove.
Yeah, yeah.
But the spot we wanted to be was where they were. And it was like...
air quotes, where they were trying to claim a spot.
Yeah, trying to claim a spot.
I think your physical presence claims a spot. Just like a tree stand. Like, you can go in there and hunt it.
I was thinking about the claiming the spot thing driving up here. And I think part of
he's been thinking about this.
When I called him today, what was supposed to be a 5-minute conversation turned into 15 because it was like, well, what about this scenario?
We've discussed it. And see, we've all three worked on public ground.
Uh-huh.
If you work on public ground very much, you see tree stands everywhere. And you realize how many tree stands are actually in the woods.
Yeah.
Some people, I don't think, realize how many stands get hung. And they think, well, I hang a stand. That's my spot. Nobody can get in there.
It doesn't work like that.
I mean, we used to, when we hunted public ground a ton in like northern Missouri, it was always a, when we went in to scout a new place, we played the game of find the tree stand.
Yeah.
Because you knew with the availability of aerial maps and everything else, people scouted out and you're like, well, this place looks really good, but.
How many stands are going to be in there?
There's a stand.
It almost got to where you search for you don't search for the obvious good spot.
You avoid those.
You avoid those.
Right.
You search for
secrets. We've been still in public now.
You look for the junky spots that are overlooked, and the spots that maybe not even junky. They may be amazing, but they're overlooked for some secret reason or some reason. So, to me, I'll play you a scenario, and then I'll lay up another scenario for you. The whole don't hunt the tree stand thing is easy to say, no, somebody's that's somebody's spot. Like that's their tree stand. But if you flip it and you go to some place where there's not many trees, you're gonna run into that at some point or another. And then you're going, here's the I can think of a spot right now, we could drive right to it, look at the tree and say, that's the tree because that's the only tree. And there's a good chance at some point this fall you go to hunt that tree, there's gonna be a tree stand in it. And it's like you could be the very – to me, I think if you're like trying to play by the rules in public ground, first come, first serve. If you want that spot so bad, you better get there early.
And physical – so physical presence, you're saying physical absolutely. Presence being there claims a spot. I agree. Absolutely. I agree. Because tree stand doesn't do it.
Sometimes and there's places we've hunted multiple times and places where we scouted around, and there was another spot where it was – there was one tree that you wanted to hunt. And there was a stand in there. Well, we'd been around enough that we recognized the name, and we saw like five or six stands from the same guy.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, he's put stands all over this place claiming his spots. But it's like, that's the only tree you can hunt.
Yeah.
Do you go somewhere else? Now,
no.
Looking back at the fact, we did hunt that stand, and it had been hunted enough that the deer avoided that spot, and we... Like, well, that tree's awesome normally, but it's been hunted so much.
Tarnished.
That the deer avoid.
One guy commented, he said, I'm so tired of hunters and their stupid unwritten rules. Unless you own the property, expect someone to hunt your spot or your tree stand. And that's it. Like, if back in the old days when I used to carry in ladders or whatever, leave a climber, at some point, if I left it there for very long, you just kind of expected somebody to hunt it.
Hunt the tree or use your stand.
Use the stand, yeah.
I always considered it if I took it in there and hung it up, it was public ground again.
Yeah, it's like, well, somebody...
Is that by default or, like, is that just the way... Is that an unwritten rule? That, like, I'm going to do it to someone else, so I'm allowing... Like, would you get mad if you found someone in your stand that you left?
No, not if they beat me to the place.
Because I would rarely get beaten to it anyway. we've been
rule.
Called diehard so many times that with that kind of stuff, I'm hunting public ground.
Here's
something
to do your
we used to do, and maybe
and
it's
get
a.
There.
I don't think it's any kind of rule or anything, but we used to, if we found our spot, we would all
let
try to hunt from the.
Everyone's tires in the parking lot.
We would like to hang out in the parking lot. And as soon as. And we were all ready to go. And so, like, we would hang out there midday, and if somebody rolled in, boop. Gonzo.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were always the first ones
off.
In. Yeah.
And it's even more so turkey hunting.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I ran into it this year in Oklahoma. And that's here's an unwritten rule. Say you're in the parking lot.
Oh, that's
somebody,
one of my. That's
somebody,
one of my.
Somebody else is in the parking lot. You pull up. You plan on going in there. There's like a.
One road going out?
One road going in. One drainage. You pull up and somebody else is parked there. They're not gone from their truck yet, but they're ready to go. You pull up. Do you just turn around and go somewhere else, or do you try to go with them?
I'd have a conversation with them, be like, so, like, where are you going? I mean, it's kind of a stupid question, but it's just, like, courteous.
To me, I
where
feel like
going?
If it's an obvious,
you
like, part of the country where there's only like one little drainage, I'm probably going somewhere else. I don't want to. Chances are we don't hunt the same style, or I'm probably going to think
he's going to screw this up for me.
Yeah, he's going to mess this up. I'm going somewhere else.
Because, I mean, I've told you guys the story, but I had that this year. I got there early, got to a spot, was sitting there getting my stuff together, and I was like, boy, it's a long time till daylight. I'm not walking on in there yet because I'm just going to be sitting there. And I had planned on, I was in Oklahoma on public ground. I thought, well, I can see far enough.
Lights coming in or something.
And a guy got up on me before I even realized it.
He was
oh,
sleeping.
Man. And I went to grab my stuff, and he was already there. And I'm like, he pulls up, and he's like, where are you going? And I was like,
the one drain.
The drainage right here? And he's like, well, right or left. And I'm like, I was going to go down there into that drain and wait.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like,
it's a turkey. It gobbles.
He's like, well,
turkey.
I dropped a buddy off on the other side, and I've come around.
Mm,
and
I love those.
And then gave me the, well, you can go, there's a food plot there, you can go this side and I'll go the other side. There's a lot more area that way.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, when I got in there, I realized they'd been there the evening before and knew right where the turkey was
at. Yeah, yeah.
Did they kill the turkey?
No, they did not. somebody sat on the south side of the food plot and almost called the turkey in.
Ah, uh-huh.
It came from them and came by me.
Right.
So here's the question for you. Let's say you do have a scenario where somebody is in the spot you planned on going. To me, like, that was always a rule for us, is like, if you pull up to a parking lot and there's already a certain amount of vehicles and there's already, and you look at the map and you're like, there's that many spots, I'm not even going to bother. It was like, if I got beat to the punch, I'm not going in there. That's always been my rule. I'm not going to try to go in there and beat somebody out.
I would consider that an unwritten rule.
What if, here's a scenario for you. What if you've got a spot that you're like, your buddy says, hey, I'm going to this spot. Okay, cool. And then that person ends up being at the spot they told you they weren't going. And you know there's multiple birds or there's multiple locations. You go ahead and go. Done it.
Say that one
I can
again?
So a scenario we dealt with was, you have a conversation with somebody over the phone. Where are you guys going this afternoon? We're going down to this place. Okay, cool. I'll go over here to this place, point B, and they went to point A. You get to point B, and their truck's parked there. Like, why are they at point B? They told us they were going to point A. And then you realize this is a turkey hunting scenario. There's a bunch of birds gobbling in there, and you say, oh, man, there's a bunch of birds in there, and they told us they weren't coming over here. They swung by this spot. They went by point B en route to point A, to make sure that see if there was any birds gobbling where you told them you were going. That happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up going into point B and almost, we went after different birds. Once we got back in there, we heard them working a bird and we went around and went and worked another one. But to me, I feel like you can say, if somebody's scenario is somebody's in there, you don't go. But if somebody's in there trying to beat you to the punch to blow your spot out before they go to their spot, I feel like game on.
And that's what, I guess.
We didn't have permission to hunt point B, by the way. That's what our point A.
I was going
to
say, wait a second.
Why couldn't we just go to their spot? But we didn't have permission.
I guess what you see from all this is there's a lot of variables to
these. So many variables.
Rules, where you can throw another little layer on top and it's like, well, that kind of changes it. Well,
yeah.
That kind
of
changes
it. We had probably the best comment of all was one guy just wrote, oh, man, I want to give him credit because this is Joey Walker, the best comment, and this is the rule of thumb, do unto others.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you're going to a spot or you tell somebody you're going to that spot, go to that spot. Don't change it halfway through trying to mess their hunt up or whatever.
Or if you do, hopefully it's for a good reason, call them. Just let them know. Things happen.
It was not that case for Chad and I. Hunting someone else's tree stand is more of a safety issue for me. This was something, and very true.
Oh, yeah.
You might not realize the strap is old or the stand isn't hung properly until it's too late. Chances are, for me, you guys know this, I'm very particular about how the stand's set up. Being a lefty, just comfort, everything, making sure the stand is hung properly and set up in the right situation is important. Now, once again, like, to me, the rule was always if there's a tree stand on public land, it's public property. Doesn't matter if it's yours. Like, if I hang a set on public property, anybody can hunt it. Now, it's a little bit different because we don't leave our steps there. So if they want to go to the trouble of bringing steps in and hunt it and they beat me to the spot, sure, it's all theirs. Chances are they won't beat me to the spot.
But that's what you're... What if they do beat you to the spot?
Then it's
what
all theirs.
Yeah. You're walking away completely saying, hey, that's my tree stand, but go
absolutely
ahead and hunt it.
Yeah.
No hard feelings, nothing.
When you had a place in Kansas that I'd hunted opening day for years because I would get there hours before daylight.
Yeah.
Nobody ever beat me to it.
Yeah.
I ran in there one day and I'm like, there's somebody here. Which this place was one that there were a lot of options.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I've got daylight. I could see the guy. I'm like, well, I'm going to follow and see if he's heading that direction. But when I figure out that he's going where I was trying to go,
or peel off and do something
I'm
else.
I'm gone. I'll go somewhere. And that's what I did. I walked in, and it was like, became obvious, this guy's going right to the drainage that I always hunt. I'm like, guess I got to go somewhere else. I
going to
somewhere
a,
else.
See, the
I
difference.
Came, I came back mid-morning.
Yeah.
And he was gone, and I killed one in there.
You know, a location, a general location, sure, they beat you to the punch. But it's like, if you're talking about personal property turning into public property, What if you that to me is like the gray area of like your stand or your personal property. I wouldn't go and you know, consider someone else's stand a now a public object or trail camera or something like that. Like I wouldn't use it as my own. I wouldn't check the trail camera pictures on it. But it's like where's that line? Where's the line? Because it's public land, but it is private property. It's like if your car is parked in a public lot, like that's not public property if someone messed with your truck.
Yes, but at the same time, your truck should be locked.
Stands should be locked so they don't get stolen, stuff like that. But like,
yeah, but
like,
you can't lock them out of it. Like, it's not like a you put up a ground blind or something. Are you going to expect nobody to hunt a ground blind? Because anybody can get in a ground blind.
Well, here's the other one with a vehicle. You have all your registration and stuff. It's parked in the parking lot. If you leave your vehicle, say you go somewhere and commute for 10 days, and you come back, it's not like that 10 days they're going to come and – or if you leave it past this time, it's not like they're going to come and – if it's in like a commuter lot, they're not going to come and take it.
Yeah.
And a tree stand, say the thing 14 days, if you leave it there for 30 days and somebody like a game warden realizes that, they're going to confiscate that tree stand.
To me, I always go back to...
But they're the law. They're there to uphold the law.
Yeah.
But you're not doing anything to...
That's a written rule. We're talking
to me, I don't... Like, always comes down to, did they beat me? Because if I put up a ground blind on public ground, I'm at some point and I leave it, I never would do this. But if I did leave it, somebody's going to hunt it.
Never do that.
If I don't want somebody to hunt my tree stand, I'm taking the steps with me.
Yeah.
And that's what we always do.
And if they carry the steps in, that's fine.
Yeah.
If you don't want somebody to hunt your tree stand, don't leave it there.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one for you. I guess I almost didn't share this story, but I'm going to because safety was brought up. Same tree stand that I shot that good deer out of, I go back the next year and it's still in the same tree, same scenario. Doesn't appear like it's even moved.
Mm-hmm.
Broke the law because it stayed there all summer. Climbed up in it. It's happened twice in my life. And this time it was early season because I was actually working on that conservation area by this point.
You more climbed up in it to check it.
I climbed up in it to check it and look at it. I think
you checked it. You were checking for a name, weren't you?
I think so. I don't even know if it was hunting season yet, to be honest with you, because it was when I was working on the property. Cable
you're
broke.
You were just reliving the moment.
Pretty much. Cable broke, almost threw me out of the tree stand.
Yeah.
Broke it. And that's what this guy's concern was. I don't know what condition, the straps or anything. Praise the Lord, I didn't fall because I wasn't wearing a harness. I really don't even think it was hunting season. I can't remember, but cable broke and pow, and I ended up jumping back on the ladder before it completely gave way. And it's like, okay, so now the stand was against the law because it spent the whole year on the property. To me, it just gets back into that gray area of going, okay, where's the line? I just wanted to share that story because I can't tell you how many stands I've climbed up in over the years, homemade stands, just because for some reason I get this. I don't know why, but I just want to see what it looks like from the top of the tree stand.
And I see so many of them. I see so many of them on Forest Service ground.
Uh-huh.
It's a guarantee. I'm gonna like. What's this person? I like to see
what's the attraction.
I mean, and some of them it more consists of I've run into tree stands on Forest Service land that I could stand flat-footed and grab the platform and swing on it. Oh, and it's one of those you grab it and swing on it like, hey, look at this. Like Mark and Timber, we ran into them all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, here's another one. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this one. It's November 15th. It's Missouri rifle season. It's also, I can't remember, when is quail season open in Missouri? The 15th or the 1st? The 1st, I believe. I don't remember. 1st. So it's November 1st. What bow hunter in the right mind don't want to be in the woods November 1st?
What quail hunter don't want to be in the woods?
Exactly. You pull up there as a quail hunter, you're getting there daylight or mid-morning, but you pull up there and there's a whole bunch of trucks, people bow hunting. Do you go in with your bird dogs and run all over the place?
If you don't have another option, if there's not another good place to hunt, it's public ground. They can do it.
That's right.
And see, that's it's,
what about a bird watcher, though? He's out there.
It's public ground. They have every right.
You want to talk about some mad, mad people.
Oh, yeah. They'd be really upset. But at the same time, if there's a dog out there, they could easily bump deer. If you're
absolutely
in a travel corridor, that's where you should be anyhow.
Some people are going to be mad, and some people are going to be like,
getting the deer up.
Yeah.
Get them out of the cover out there in the fields and run them
right
in here to me.
To me, I mean, that's what goes with hunting public ground. You just have to expect the unexpected.
You have to be prepared, and I think if you're not willing to be flexible and understand that at some point something like what we're talking about is going to happen, then you have unrealistic expectations of hunting public ground.
What about an over-aggressive hunter? That could be...
like calling too much or what?
Calling too much.
I've been there.
It could. Oh, you did. You were there on private ground.
I've been there with another one of us in the group. Oh. It's the over-aggressive caller.
Not to name any name.
Oh, for sure. I'm thinking, you know, that's a bunch of different things. That's a guy who's rattling September 20th, and you're in a tree stand over a nice food plot or next to a bedding area, and a guy comes in. You know, that's part of it. And to me, there's so many times as hunting public ground when you're going to run into an inexperienced, ignorant hunter. And that's not... I mean,
ignorant, just lack of knowledge.
Well, you're going to hear that on the other podcast. I guess that's why I chose that word.
To me, it also, I can't.
I'm talking about. I'm going to talk. The reason I bring this up is I'm talking about all the times you're setting late season on a food plot. It's prime time, and 30 minutes before dark, you hear something. Here comes Larry Longbow walking along, arrow knocked, traditional archer, trying to still hunt his way into the food plot.
You tell that story from personal experience, because we had a public ground spot where deer were coming into food plots late season.
Right.
And a guy walked up on one from the road, and word got out of a good buck. And that year, the rest of the year, there was rarely a time we sat on a food plot that we didn't have somebody come, like, in blue jeans and a camo shirt with a face mask, they got off work, and they would come in the evenings and just start walking food plots trying to shoot deer out of the food plots.
Yeah. That was
that's just annoying. Like,
that's
I
it.
Mean, and that's a lack of inexperience of probably preferred or best chance tactics. But again, as frustrating as it is, he can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, he totally
ground.
Can do it.
You have to.
It's if you're trying to hunt it, that's the thing. Hunting's just because you have a different hunting scenario or style doesn't mean you're right or wrong. You're just probably more effective or less effective than someone else.
So
and I guess what you do is you have to use that to your advantage. It's like the over-aggressive person.
Don't hunt food plots.
You don't hunt food plots. We sat there.
Is it
on the same area and had people? I could hear three different people rattling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three different areas.
Is it legal
and I had deer come by
to do deer drives on public ground?
I don't think there's a law against it.
So let's say
on some public ground, obviously they all change, but I hunted one when I was growing up. You
couldn't.
Yeah. Let's say it's perfectly legal. How long do you put up with somebody doing deer drives before you try to talk to them and say, hey, man, or do you just finally go somewhere else? But it's you got one spot close to home. You know, Wright County doesn't have a lot of public ground. Where we live, where Chad and I grew up, there wasn't a lot of public ground. And so, and they're not, they're, most of them are like river access. It's 200-300 acres. Let's say you go in on one of them and there's Tom, Dick, and Harry, and they all three love doing deer drives. How long do you put up with that before you either start fishing or say something to them saying, hey, guys, I'm trying to hunt in here too. Your style don't match my style. Do you ever do it?
I mean, there's not really anything you can do to tell them to stop. I think if you're going to keep hunting there, you have to adjust how you're hunting.
Yeah.
You have to use use them to your advantage.
And I think it's kind of like when you go and you drive in a city. Like, you have to be a defensive driver based on all everyone else's activities. If you're going in to hunt a public piece of ground, you have to anticipate there being pressure. And if you're not Adam's trying to take a drink and just
microphones in the wrong way, in the wrong spot.
But you have to go in defensively almost to know, hey, this spot we talked about earlier, the good spots, they're going to have pressure on them.
You already messed up. You're playing defense. You got to play offense, man.
You got to get aggressive.
Well, you know,
if they're aggressive, you got to get more aggressive.
call more and louder.
Go further. Yeah.
Snort wheeze every 5 minutes.
I'm just thinking.
You play defense. Deer are smart.
To me, I don't hunt public ground like I would hunt private ground. Some things are similar, but you have the ability, and this is kind of like code of ethics too, I guess, is, are you going to do things that you wouldn't do on your own ground? Like, I wouldn't dare go into a sanctuary to hunt a bedding area right on top of a bedding area on my public ground or a private ground. But a lot of people do it on public ground. And it's like, hey, it's almost like if you're playing in a wood bat league and a guy shows up with an aluminum bat, it's perfectly legal. But it's like, how long before you start doing the same stuff? You start swinging an aluminum bat versus, to me, it's like the same thing. Like, there's a lot of guys who are very successful on public ground because they get really aggressive. But if we took those strategies and we put them on private ground, we'd blow out our spots, and we'd quickly go somewhere else because our deer are nocturnal.
And I guess that's why public ground can be so tough to hunt, but it also can make it, to me, it helps you cancel out a lot of areas.
Yeah.
You can use that to your advantage.
That's what I'm saying by hunting defensively.
I mean, you can go in.
He's really hanging up on that.
You change how you hunt completely on the public ground to where it's like, I'm going to go into spots, I'm going to hunt bedding, I'm going to be aggressive, I'm going to go into the bedding areas, because a lot of times those bedding areas are the places that people don't think about hunting. You're going to realize, well, the deer are bedding right here next to the highway. I'm going to hunt, I'm still going to use the wind and everything else, but I'm going to hunt those areas.
To me, I feel like the best analogy I can have for this, I guess, for you baseball guys is, if I'm on private ground, I'm going to hunt it. I'm going to try and, you know, I'm going to bunt the man over. I'm going to move him over. I'm going to take the extra base. I'm going to try and hit some singles. I'm going to try and hit the sack fly and get a run in. If I go to public ground, it's like I'm swinging for the fences every single
time.
I don't care if nobody's on and we're down five, I'm still swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
And to me, that's how the approach is in a lot of public ground, and that's what I'm seeing more and more people who are successful on public ground. That's the strategy they're using. What? They're going in there.
And I think that's like, you know, when we look at hunting pressure on public land, there's two different types of pressure. It's number of people that hunt them, but also the tactics and the style in which how aggressive you are. And that's why public ground has so much pressure.
And that's why, like, as opposed to private land, you have so many more variables. In private land hunting, you just have the deer and your own self that you're accounting for. With public ground, you have to account for
definitely
Joe Blow riding horse through this area, everybody walking. I mean, you have the rabbit hunters. I mean, there's public land that I hunt that they have no consistent bedding area because there are so many people. You account on those deer being jumped every day.
Yeah. Or you have to almost step on them to get them out.
Mm-hmm. It's that thick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been there.
Yeah. So are you ever going to, as a, let's say, flip the scenario, you have a longbow, recurve, compound, whatever it is, and you're like, you know what, I want to do a little steel hunting. How many people do you have to walk by before you start feeling bad?
Oh, Lordy. It probably depends. There's only certain situations I would ever do it in, like time of the year wise, that I would do it in. So, like, that's a tough question. Here's the thing. You're going to bump if it's a hot public land area, you can walk to your stand and you're going to see people. I mean, you're going to walk past them. Sometimes you just, okay, you see a person, you bounce around them, you move on. That happens. Again, that's an expectation, I think. But dadgummit, if that's the way you choose to hunt, that's what you can do.
So let's flip it again, and you're that man who enjoys still hunting. That man in the tree stand that you walked by the last two Saturdays, he's had enough. That man starts walking out in front of you 100 yards. He keeps stopping, looking back, seeing which direction you're going, but he's trying to walk in front of you. How long does that go on before you get mad? As the man who's been making everybody mad, now's the man getting mad.
That.
The whole point of this is just to understand there's a scenario to probably prove your point wrong. And there's a scenario that you can use to say, this is why I'm right. But it all comes down to there's so many variables and there's so many different scenarios that it really comes down to try to have a code of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Because there's so many times that man who's walking around steel hunting or rabbit hunting or squirrel hunting, he's all fine and dandy doing his own thing because he's picked a scenario that knows most guys aren't doing. But until somebody starts messing his up, that's when you're going to get mad. And to me, that's why I ask you that about the guy walking in front of you, because you could sit there and be the only poor sack that's strapping on the longbow recurve on your back, right, walking around like Robin Hood, and you think, boy, everybody else hunts that way, I'm going to hunt this way. And it's all fine and dandy until somebody starts doing it too. Because I guarantee if you walk to a big field and you're like, I'm sneaking
me,
up, why is there no deer out here? Then you look on the other side and there's a guy that's already walked through there doing the same thing. That's when it's going to start getting irritating.
Wouldn't that be like a similarity between like a guy like hanging right next to another guy, like what happened to Chad? Like in a hunting situation? See, but in that situation, I feel like that was wrong.
And
absolutely.
See, I guess this is one of those things to remind everyone that to always think of the other guy's side of the story.
Definitely.
Because, I mean, Arkansas, where I work, in southern Arkansas, you can still run dogs on a lot of the places. And you talk to people that run dogs, and they're like, well, we just get the deer moving. All the people that are still hunting ought to be happy because we're keeping the deer moving. But in the same side of that, say, they've got a place that they like to run dogs, how will they feel if they go there in the afternoon and somebody else has already been there and already ran dogs and ran the deer off of that? Or if they are going somewhere and somebody else goes there before them and does it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of those where you always have to think of the other person.
Totally.
Before you get mad and lose your head.
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure. You got any others? You got anything in mind? We've got a few minutes left, and I'm trying to go through because we had a ton of comments, and I want hilarious one. Our friends over at the Element Podcast, they commented. Oh, I do have another one for you. But they commented and said that hunting another man's tree stand is a lot like wearing another man's underwear. I think they said something like they're okay with it if you are.
Gross.
So,
oh, that's funny.
I'm a little bit, I told them in the message, they tagged us in their story and said that, and I was like, well, I guess I've worn another man's underwear and I killed a pretty good buck doing it, so I'm cool with it if he is.
Here's one. Like, what if it's not public ground? What if it's like two guys private ground. There's a good deer overlapping home range, core area on both properties. But, like, one guy feels like, hey, that's my deer. He's on my property. And the other guy's like, hey, that's my deer on my property. Do you have a right to be angry if the other guy harvests it?
No, you're, not
like,
at all.
I think the unwritten rule, like, people's trying to always claim deer. You know what I mean? Like,
I've seen that said a lot.
Oh, that's my deer,
Lot of that was – that's the problem with game cameras and naming deer.
Yeah,
is people name these deer and want to, they might have 100 acres and – five or six
and everyone
people are
knows
getting
that's
a picture
not,
of this deer, and
yeah.
they all have a certain name for it. And I'm like, oh, yeah. He killed Joe. And it's
well, no, he killed Billy. It's the same deer.
Yeah.
I feel like, I feel like that possessiveness, like, because it is private ground. It's like, oh, he's on my turf. But, like, I feel there's that weird, until it happens, I guess, to you, people are just, like, take that possessiveness too far, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, shoot, when we – what was the name of the deer that got killed by the neighbor a couple years ago? What was that nine-pointer?
Oh.
That just ranged, like,
I don't remember the name of it.
Way out, like a mile.
Who killed it?
Blake.
Right.
The one that, the one that chased the doe way off.
Mesa.
Killed it.
Mesa, yeah. It's like, how deer was on camera all the time.
Yeah.
But
no,
it's like
– by chance, he's
boom,
just –
he's just gone.
And you remember what happened that year? No acorns,
mm-hmm.
and no food plots, hardly. The food plots were pitiful because we didn't have rain. We fixed all that pretty quickly the next year. But, yeah, definitely we weren't mad. Shoot, we posted about it.
Yeah, congratulations.
Congratulated. Yeah, they said, so going back to a couple comments we had, the guys down at the Element Podcast, they said that they would be upset if a man hunted their tree stand, but they wouldn't be, what'd he say, it's totally legal in our state. I'd be ticked if I found someone in my stand on public, but it is legal. Hanging hunts kind of fix all that, though. That's where it's like, if you have a problem with somebody hunting your tree stand, find a way to where you're not leaving your tree stand in there. But if you don't have a problem with it, leave it. Who cares?
Saddle hunting.
That's a couple guys were like, saddle hunting fixes all that.
Mm-hmm.
Parker over at Southern
McDonald,
Ground.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
he commented.
I mean, it does. I guess fix that.
He's like, but it's not a problem because I saddle hunt for life, baby, or something like that. Here's one for you. Hunting property lines.
Oh, yeah.
So this we could shift off this. Well, you could do it even on public ground.
Yeah.
Is it cool to hunt public ground property lines? That is the world. I mean, how many public ground hunting guys?
That's like the broadhead comparison questions.
You're going to you try to go to the private because it's like, well, shoot,
less pressure.
The food's on the private. I'm going to catch them as they come back to bedding. Everybody does that, but then you flip it and you go to public ground. It's like, don't you dare hunt close to my property. I don't have a problem with it. Where the issue, I guess, comes up is that the same spot they always hunt? And my biggest issue is, as long as they don't shoot something on the on our property line, that's cool.
Yeah.
But as soon as you start shooting over the fence or shooting deer that are on another property that you don't have permission, that's where the line is. Another unwritten rule, if you shoot a deer on private ground and it runs across the fence onto the neighbor, do you just go and get it?
And this is where you plan ahead. You have to have good relations with the neighbor to have that.
And if you don't, you better
mend fences or fix it.
Stop shooting until until they're done.
Yeah.
And that's
if
you're going to hunt the property line and there's a good chance of the deer going across, you better try to plan ahead and try to get that worked out.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess most states, though, it's illegal for them to stop you from retrieving wounded game. I'm pretty sure in most states, like on private land, if you make contact, like they're not supposed to.
So one guy commented and said, you absolutely can't hunt private boundaries. Like that's against the rules. You shouldn't be able to hunt boundaries. And the next guy said, well, how's that? I only have 12 acres.
Uh-huh.
And now a scenario where.
He hunts anywhere and he's hunting the boundary.
Exactly. Yeah. What if you have an easement? Can you hunt the easement then? You technically own it.
If you got a 20-foot easement, you better shoot quick.
You better shoot quick and put them down.
Yeah.
Well, and I read in that one guy brought up brought up a scenario of somebody hunting a clear cut where it's been planted in pines, a pine plantation, and the pines are 6-7 foot tall.
Right.
There's the only open lanes are along the fence lines. And he gives a guy permission to hunt and tells him don't cut any trees.
Yeah.
What's he do?
To me, the only way to draw the line is the line. If that deer is on public ground, you're hunting public ground, it doesn't matter, and you're on public ground legally, you have every right to shoot that deer. Every right. If it steps across and it's on private, no. And if you're sitting on private, no.
What about
the man who's
all green, and if it's in green, you can shoot it. But if it's in red, you can't shoot it.
Yeah.
Unless you have permission.
Well, I'd say, what about the lucky guy who does hunt private ground that borders the public ground, and there's a public land hunter close to the fence, and he shoots across it and kills it first?
Yeah,
I mean, that's free game.
If you're a private ground, hunting private ground next to public, and there's a deer on public ground, you can shoot it. But if you're a public ground hunter and there's a deer on private, you can't shoot it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I like – you guys are doing real estate. It's always one of those that you see the real estate ads where it's like, oh, it borders Mark Twain National Forest and as like a great thing. And I was like, that's –
depends on how deep in the forest it borders.
You're going to deal with the headaches of everyone wants to go and hunt your boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
That's what you're going to deal with on owning land next to it.
You mentioned the easement. You've got a long right of way all the way back into
20-foot easement or 50-foot easement.
I saw that. It was like 2 years ago on a listing. It was like 20-yard, strip all the way back along the road, and the stand was on the actual like fence line. The fence was stapled into this tree, and there's a stand on it looking out into the neighbor's field. I don't know if he had permission or not, but it's like, what do you do? You're on a little narrow strip,
and it's facing the neighbor.
Oh, yeah, the neighbor.
That's the problem that and I read it in the comments. That's the problem a lot of people have, where it's the unwritten rule of hunting the property lines, and people don't like it. Is the thought of somebody sitting in a tree stand and shooting across the property line?
Right.
I mean, that's not an unwritten rule. That's a written rule.
Correct.
You don't shoot on the private property.
Correct.
On the side, but that's the concern with a lot of people of hunting property lines.
Everyone that makes the assumption that someone's if they're ballsy enough to put a stand there, that they're willing enough to stretch that yardage line and shoot across the line. That's what the main concern is, I guess. What else we got?
No, I think that pretty well wraps it up. I mean, we've been going at it for about an hour. And I just think there's so many. And I know once we release this podcast, it's going to be more. And we're probably going to end up doing Unwritten Rules Part 2 and maybe even Part 3. Because we haven't even talked about turkey hunting or fishing.
Well, and I guess
fishing
the point of it,
waterfowl is a big one, though.
Oh. If it does anything, it just gets people discussing it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Instead of just
consciously thinking about their action prior to taking it.
The only way to actually have any outcome that's good at all is to talk about it.
Nah, you're right.
And discuss it.
Yeah.
You're talking about overcalling. We go on and on about waterfowl
busting.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, waterfowling has a ton of it.
Oh, man.
There's so much of it.
Calling too much. Yeah. I mean, elk hunting, there's so much, where's the rule? To me, I feel like you can't. Calling is calling. You could call all day, every day on public ground, and nobody could say nothing to you because it's totally illegal in a lot of instances. Especially, I could go out in the best spot November 1st and rattle till November 15th, and it's not breaking one law.
Yep.
You're not going to do any good.
I'm not going to do any good.
Don't rattle, just
tickle
them.
You sure are going to have fun doing it.
Yeah.
You did the what we referenced where I had the on private land having an over-aggressive caller.
Yeah.
You sure had a lot of fun that day.
No, I did.
Was that turkey or deer hunting?
That was deer hunting.
Deer hunting. I'm trying to think here. Longbow Walker, we covered that one. The deer drivers, we did cover that one. Over-aggressive hunter, that one just, there's so many things you could do.
So many applicable situations.
Yeah. Dad's got a scenario where he was out scouting. I mean, we dealt with this a lot in northern Missouri. That week, the best week to hunt almost every year is the week before Missouri firearm season.
Right.
But if you hunt public ground where firearm hunting is legal, at some point during that week, the rifle hunter is going to start rolling in and start scouting.
They never do it in the middle of the day. It would be like they would roll in at 2 in the afternoon, and then they would set camp up, and then at 30 minutes before dark, you'd have some, you'd have two guys carrying a ladder stand through the middle of the field, and it's just like, well, there goes I might as well climb down now, because they're over, and you can hear them clanking and putting a stand up at dark, and you're just like, well, my hunt's done.
I would never do that, but there's no law that says they can't do that.
What about those tacks? The marking tacks. How many trails have you seen going through public ground and you start moving tacks around?
Oh, my gosh.
How many times?
You remember that, you know, over that one. You would get lost if you tried to follow it in this one conservation area.
There was one place that it was a long way in there, and there were so many tacks and so many different people's tacks that, mm-hmm. like, one guy was putting two. One guy was putting three.
Oh,
you
okay,
walked through
okay.
the woods, and it was just, like, lit up. Yeah. If you walked in there,
I'm like,
you
turned into a Scooby-Doo show, like just lights on everything and neon stuff everywhere.
Oh,
like
man.
It was like you would get. I remember it was like, all right, this is the spot we got to go. We're gonna walk back there. We're gonna use lights for a while, and it was like, oh, somebody's marked the trail. Wow, they're really marking the trail, and I mean, it was like an interstate. And then it turned into where there
was
so many
like
of them,
stop
you couldn't
light.
Even figure out which way the trail was.
Oh my gosh!
Because you'd see like. Two dot guy going this way.
Yeah.
Three dot guy goes this way.
That's
one
hilarious.
Dot goes this, and it'd be like different. It was just stuff everywhere.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. And to me, that goes back to the question, too. Like, okay, that's is that cool? Because technically, you're not supposed to have anything that attaches to the tree. Like, you're not supposed to use screwing steps on public ground because it could damage a tree.
Mm-hmm.
How many tacks does it take to start damaging the tree?
Probably. Yeah.
And how long do you have to, I mean, they were leaving them out there.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
No one goes back for a tack.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, man. A lot of fun stuff on public ground. There's a little part of me that's like, man, I can't wait. I want to hunt some public ground again just to.
Go through the frustration.
And then I'm like, the first fella that comes walking, or he's late to the stand. Then I'm going to say, I'm ready to go home.
But
if we didn't work my butt off to buy ground.
I mean, there's a reason there's so many of the unwritten rules that go around public ground. But it's also, if we didn't do it, we wouldn't have so many stories of it.
I mean,
a lot of our hunting earlier on, and I mean, there were years early in our hunting seasons where if we wanted to actually get a chance to shoot deer, we went public ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was not much of a deer population around the farm. And especially if you wanted a chance at a good deer.
Yeah, yeah.
We were going somewhere else. We hunted public ground the whole time.
Mm. Trying to read some of these, but man, there's so many good comments and long comments.
Well, I think it's funny and certainly applicable. Like there's so, when you're talking about situations and all these people are putting up amazing comments, it's like, because everyone has found themselves somewhere in one of these situations on either side of it probably too.
The one guy says he wouldn't hunt another man's tree stand because he wouldn't feel right about it. Like, you probably would if you knew it was the tree that you had to be in.
And that's, I guess, part of what we're talking about with the tree stand thing is before you give a definitive answer, there's always another scenario that you're not going to be so definitive on.
I think of that one set down there on that area in central Missouri we used to hunt. With the river runs through it in that big bottom, and I went back to the very back corner, and there was one tree, and that one tree had a tree stand in it. So I hung in a very small tree next to it and regretted it the entire time.
Probably
I thought, never again, I'll just hunt the tree stand. Yep. Oh, man. A lot of, one guy said, earn your own. No and no. Yeah.
Here's another one. Speaking of, I think maybe the same area that you're talking about, but here's I don't know if it's an unwritten rule or I guess a question for yourself on public land, but say you're going into a spot and you go in there and find where somebody else has been hunting. You find a big corn pile. This is on public ground. It's not legal. It's not legal in the state of Missouri.
Yeah.
But you find a big corn pile.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Do you hunt somewhere off of it? Do you
and say that
I
you
mean,
don't know? Or
I
what?
Say this, but I would never do it because there's a chance that my luck, I would be sitting there and a game warden would walk up.
And with
you
job,
you don't hunt
you
the same spot. But my luck, I would be sitting there, and he'd be like, did you put that there? And there's no way he could prove you didn't put it there.
Yeah.
So you don't hunt that. Do you just go somewhere else, leave it alone? Do you call an agent and say, hey, just so you know, there's a big pile of corn mm-hmm. over here.
Mm-hmm.
here's some good ones this guy said. He said, offer to leave the land better than you found it. So there's a bunch of different – say, help a buddy find, drag, carry, gut, skin a deer. Like, I guess the unwritten rule in that would be – that's just a comment he had. Help a buddy find, drag, carry, gut, skin a deer.
What about
– and he says another one, unwritten rule, is don't make the camp cook do the dishes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
pretty good
that's
one.
That's a pretty good
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Speaking of camps – and kind of on the same lines of help a buddy drag one out, I guess another one that we ran into last year elk hunting, we had a spot. We'd heard a bunch of elk the night before.
Yeah.
We go in there, find another road in. We drive in there, and there's a four-wheeler parked there with a meat bag laying there. It's like, oh, somebody killed one in here. Like, kind of hoping to see where it's at. Guy walks out, and it's a guy by himself. He'd killed an elk. He mm-hmm. was a good bull. It's like, do you help the guy pack it? Do you sacrifice that time of hunting
no,
to help a lone
carried
guy?
Carried himself.
To help a lone guy.
Yeah.
Whew. I mean,
to me, if I'm in that guy's shoes, I would be like, oh, if two guys showed up, man, I sure hope they would help me.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I wouldn't expect it from them, though, I guess.
I've gone into the mindset going, if I kill an elk, it's on me.
You have to be prepared.
So I wouldn't be upset if they chose to not help me.
Yeah.
But I would be very happy if they did.
Exactly.
See, like, what we ended up helping the guy, and it ended up helping us in the long run because he gave us some tips on he was a resident that had hunted that multiple times and gave us tips on the area and everything else.
Nice.
So sometimes it works out, but
sure,
it's one that do you? I mean,
sacrifice
time. You've traveled hours and hours and spent a whole bunch of money on that. Mm-hmm. You sacrifice an afternoon helping a helping a guy pack an elk out
for half a tenderloin. Sure,
yeah.
It's going to cost you, sir.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't ask for anything or anything because he gave us a bunch of tips or and it wouldn't. I mean, I just. Like to see where we wanted to see where he'd killed the elk because then we knew where to avoid because there was a big elk carcass there that
bears would be at. Yeah. What about like we talked about parking and like getting there first and everything. What about like if you're hunting in a group but you both drove but you're both going to hunt out of the same parking area and you go drive someone else's the other rig over to parking area B but you're not hunting there to basically say like reserve it if you will. Is that right? Is that wrong? Like is that okay? And neither of you are hunting. Maybe you want to hunt it the next day.
It's there for their interpretation.
I mean,
they can interpret it however they want to.
Okay, so here's two. I guess I'll give two options on that. Opening day of turkey season, you've got a big area that you're wanting to hunt. You've got three guys going in from one side,
mm-hmm.
and you park a vehicle on the other side before you go in there to kind of keep it where there's vehicles there on both
sides,
kind of keep it.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
You have that one.
Because you never know if you're going to walk out the other way, right?
I know guys
that
do that.
Or a mid-morning set.
Like public ground, that's turkey hunting. They'll park multiple
vehicles.
From what I hear. They'll park multiple.
My friend. I
know
our guy.
Multiple vehicles. And then so that they can kind of limit the people that come in there where they're hunting.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, they've also ran into guys youth season that are parking vehicles purely to keep people out of taking kids in to spots.
That's bad. Like,
that's terrible.
That's horrible.
They, grown guys that will park vehicles on roads to make it look like somebody's hunting to keep people from
hunting. That's not bad, neither is stabbing tires.
I mean, it's
horrible.
One of those that, I mean, you look at the unwritten rule, it's just different scenarios of where at one time it's terrible and one point it's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's not as bad.
Yeah.
I think if you have the intention or the possibility of, because if you get on a bird, like back home, public ground, it was big, big areas. And sometimes those birds, they just hit the ground. And they just gobble and walk and gobble and walk. If you're hunting with multiple people, sometimes it's not a bad idea just to save you steps. If you're hunting birds like that, you don't know where you're going to end up late morning. And we ran into that in both scenarios, whether it was like, oh, kind of a strategy situation, but also it helped us out. Carry your keys with you because you never know where you're going to end up.
Don't lose your keys.
That's true.
A screwdriver doesn't work.
A screwdriver does not work. That's right. Even if you saw it on MacGyver.
He's a liar.
That guy MacGyver, he's full of it. Oh, man. Oh, gosh. I'm trying to read some more before we wrap this up. You don't hunt any tree stand that you didn't put up. There could be a reason why it's empty. Guy's running late. He hit one. He's tracking it or whatever. It's not yours. With that being said, I would never leave a stand on public ground if there was something I wanted to keep quiet, such as deer activity or a wall hanger. To me, I've always, like, if I hang a stand on public ground, somebody can hunt it, somebody can interpret it. The only thing they can't do is take it down unless it's past the law time.
Unless you didn't
do
what
you're supposed
to.
And a game warden can walk in there and take it down.
Yeah.
For sure. I wouldn't sit in someone else's stand. This is Aaron. I wouldn't sit in someone else's stand or share someone's trail cam pics, but I wouldn't mind if someone used my stand, and I always share my trail cam pics with guys I run into on public land. I really don't have any of my own rules or follow any of the unwritten rules of hunting public land. I don't get his butt hurt over people out there enjoying the land. It's there for all of us to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the thing you talked about. It's just like, look at everyone's perspective. You know, it is public land. Like,
yeah, you take public ground with a grain of salt.
You should know what to expect, if you will, or situations that you could run into, but hopefully everyone.
Now, if he's breaking the law, I'll be mad as a hornet.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess it's one of those also, you never know what the other person's dealing with.
Yeah.
If you're on public ground, you don't know that this guy may have went to a spot that you weren't parked at and came in from another way because his three other spots had a vehicle in them, and he finally found a parking spot to go into, and he came in and walked by you. You don't know that. That could be why he's late. He could not just be
sleeping
in and coming in late. It could be that
he's
ran into three different areas that had a vehicle there.
Right. He's on plan D at that point. Because that happens.
This guy
that
said, I wouldn't hunt the stand, but I would hunt the area. Yeah. I believe in the rule, first to arrive gets the spot. If I'm there first, I'll hunt it. If he's in there first, I'll go somewhere else. Have you had this backfire? He's had this backfire on him, though. Mm. Hunting public in Ohio saw a stand in a good spot, set up near it as an all-day set, hour before dark, had the guy come in and still hunt his stand after seeing me 70 yards away. That's where it's like, that's a classic case where it's like, I'm going to not hunt. That guy beat me into it, whether I saw his truck in the parking lot, and I know that's really the only spot, or I walk in and I glass and I see him 100 yards up and he's in it, I'm backing out. But it's like, okay, that's how I'm going to do it. But it's like, oh, now I'm in it. Now that jack wagon comes right in here and he hunts it, mm-hmm. even though I'm 30 yards away.
What is a safe distance?
That's the question. That was my follow-up question.
Let's say you're in timber country. What's an appropriate distance where you're like, okay, he's not on top of me and he has every right to still be in here hunting? Like, what do you think is respectful? Let's say you're bow hunting. It's October or something. What's respectful distance?
In my mind, I don't know that there's a dead
set
line.
Each spot.
Every spot is going to be different to me.
Because you could very easily go, okay, I know they're betting there, and he's hunting here. You know, he's already beat me in there, but he's not in the right spot.
I can
cut him off.
Yeah, he wants to hunt a little bit closer to the food source, but you're going to be on the same trail, just closer to the bedding.
Yeah.
Is that wrong, though?
Man who you thought was – he may have beat you in there, but he's not beating you in wits.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you're outsmarting him.
There's a balance of woodsmanship, I think.
That would depend.
Throw woodsmanship out on public grounds.
It would depend on, like, if you – if you went in from the same parking lot. Like, if you pulled in the parking lot and his vehicle's there, and you're like, I mean, I would say it was wrong if then you walk in and you're like, huh, well, he's there. I can go cut him off.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't do that. But if you've come in from somewhere else and both are like, oh, okay. I mean, it's like if you didn't know he was in, if it was like some place where you came in from another parking lot and you're like, oh, huh, well, I can go over here. And then,
there's a big debate going on right now because we posted this morning. There's still comments going the whole time. And I think sitting on property lines isn't very ethical. It's completely legal, and I would never tell anyone how to hunt their own ground, but I do have control over what happens on mine. I've made it clear that if people are hunting within 50 yards of my borders, then game retrieval is a big no. So
really?
If they're sitting right on pretty close to the property line, they shoot one, it goes on him, they can't get it.
I don't think that's right.
And here's this one guy said, that's not very fair. I have a 12-acre track. I've had more than a few deer shot clear on the other side make it to the neighbors.
Yeah. Well,
runs all the way across his property onto the neighbors.
You shoot a deer 300 yards on your property, but it runs over onto that.
Mm-hmm.
You probably better expect not to be able to retrieve that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
For sure.
I mean, it's kind of one of those, you want to have a flexibility.
Another guy says,
neighbor.
Let me ask you this. Totally. Say the property that butts up to your land was clear cut. Okay, so that's the one
that's
you talked
about.
The problem with line sitters I've found is that they're not just shooting deer on their side of it. I have one neighbor that I trust and even let him hunt sometimes. Have had several others that haven't earned an ounce of my respect. I didn't spend the kind of money that I did to buy my property just so that the line sitters has the place to let their deer die every time they shoot and need to retrieve something.
But you can't, I mean, that's the thing, you can't control where the deer dies at.
Another guy says, what about all the private land guys setting their lines on public land? I find more stands and blinds 20 yards onto private facing the public. That doesn't seem very fair to us who can't afford their own land.
I think we covered that. That is what it is.
It's
still public ground.
Yeah, that's right.
He just happens to be, and he could have had that property inherited.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a perfect time to quote a logger down there in Arkansas that his favorite phrase is, you're just going to have that. You're just going to have that.
Yeah. Oh, man. So many comments on this one. It's all about respect. Don't sit in anyone's stand. Don't take their stand. Don't put a stand up near it. Don't go showing people someone else's trail cam pics. Respect. And that's where it's like, you can't put a stand up. You can't put a stand up next to somebody else's stand.
That's the thing of like being present there. Like
you don't do it if the guy's in the stand,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, but it's public.
But
land.
If he's not there, that's where that to me, I think that's probably one of the most debated things in public land deer hunting is there's a stand up, nobody's in it, and you're like, nobody's here. I'm the first guy in, and you hang a stand. Let's say it's the edge of a food plot. You hang a stand 20 yards away. Here comes Tom, Dick, or Harry walking down the trail an hour before dark because he's got one stand he's going to go hunt.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped over and went ahead and went in it even though he knew you were there.
That's
There's
awesome.
Been so many stinking arguments on public ground.
And that's where I guess the best advice to that is not to lose your head. You don't lose your head in that and get mad and go off on somebody. If you think – if it's an obvious one like they've come in and are hunting a spot where you're right there, use it as a learning opportunity. Don't blow up on the guy. Talk to him about it. If he had something – I mean, the time I had – it ended up being a high school kid that came up
with
and
the
hunted
climber?
Next to me. Yeah, that climbed up next to me.
School
he probably didn't
late.
Know any better, did he?
He didn't know any better. I stayed and talked to him. Because I stood down there at the base of the tree. I climbed down when it got plenty dark, and he obviously he knew.
How
he
close
was
he again?
15 yards.
Okay,
I mean like
that's
he
close
was,
enough.
He was
smell a guy's gas.
He was just over. He was just a little farther than this tree. This next
stop.
So
did you be like, hey?
I mean like I
you
could
see anything?
I could have talked to him.
You could talk to him. That was when you oh could have actually understood what he was saying when he was talking through the telephone can.
Yeah.
I mean I climbed down.
This old string can.
I had already had it in my mind I was going to take my stand down.
Yeah.
Because I'd planned on hunting there the next morning.
Okay.
But then when he did that, and I stood there at the base of the tree and could talk to him in the stand.
Yeah.
Like he stood up there and it got dark and I was waiting because I was going to talk to him and climb down. And I finally was like, Dude, you can climb down. I'm not going to fight you. I was like,
because he didn't realize how big of a boy you were.
And his response, he responded, he was like, "Well, I was just waiting for shooting light, and I was for the end of shooting light." And gosh. I'm like, I obviously pull my phone out, look at the time, look back at him, look at the time again. I'm like,
bro, you got a thermal up there, buddy?
Bro, like, I can't see the whites of your eyes.
He finally climbed down, and I talked to him for a while, and I more wanted to find out how much he'd been hunting and everything else, so I could find out more about that area and realize he'd been hunting there like every day.
Sure.
But he was young enough, he didn't have a clue. Mm-hmm. And it was one to kind of use it as a learning opportunity and kind of teach.
And you used it to be able to teach and help him.
Rather
probably.
Than blow up and try to fight
exactly.
the guy. I was like, dude, I'm like, I was hunting there for a long time.
Knowing that, you know, he was probably like, what do I do? What do I do in this situation? Yeah. He didn't know.
Dad, answer the phone. I got a guy trying to fight.
He told me he didn't plan on hunting and then had gotten out of school.
Yeah.
And rushed in and knew there wasn't a lot of time to hunt and didn't know where else to go.
I got you.
And I was kind of like, it's dude, like you just got to find some. I was like,
You know how sometimes if you're hunting, let's say private ground, and there's deer out in a food plot, and you call your buddy, he's like, "Hey, can you come run these deer out of this food plot for me?" It's like, "Dad, can you come run this guy off before I climb down?"
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
I asked one guy. I said, "Oh gosh, Brian Thompson, friend over in Eastern Missouri. He said he wouldn't hunt out of that tree stand." I said, "What if it's the only tree?" And he said, "Well, that would have to, I'm not sure." He said, "I'm not sure. I would probably be a little frustrated and have to make a decision. I usually have a climber on my back. In that situation, if I chose to get in there, in their stand, then I would have to leave my stand on the ground."
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's it. Like, unless you're just like, put your cables of your, carry the climber to the top of their ladder and stick it around their stand.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we've gone, my gosh, we've gone longer than we probably ever have on a podcast. But, my gosh, there's so many fun scenarios to talk about.
Forever.
There is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, hopefully you guys enjoyed it this week. Please leave us a review on iTunes or recommend us on Facebook. Be sure to go check out our YouTube channel because there's been a lot of videos there and a lot more videos coming, a lot of our hunting videos coming. And,
gosh, it's coming quick.
It's getting warm out here, too. So we'll talk to you guys.
Seed tick.
Stop it.
Next week.
See you guys.
See you. Yeah.